Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have as my guest Donna Moncrief. Have back as my guest Donna, who is the author of Medium 7, which is a scientific study of mediumship, a very interesting book that we've discussed on the previous Temple of Health Radio Show that you can find in the archives. If you go to plastikos.com, that's P-L-A-S-T-I-K-O-S, under Resources, Radio, and Archive, you can see that show. We're back again to discuss more, exciting information about physical mediumship, what it is and what it is not, and how I think many of us, as this energy comes in, are going to be able to participate in physical mediumship in a way that probably has never been possible before without, you know, in the past. In the past, only certain individuals had this talent, but I think more and more people are seeing angels, seeing phenomena, speaking with their dead relatives, and opening up to a whole new dimension. Welcome, Donna. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me on your show. I'm so looking forward to talking to you again.
Yeah, so you want to fill the audience in on your background and how you came to write the book Medium 7?
Well, absolutely, yes. Yeah. So first and foremost, yes, I have about 20 years background in scientific research, mostly in the area of criminology research, which is sort of crime prevention. And I myself have very much experienced throughout my lifetime a number of spiritual phenomena and wanted to really begin to use sort of that scientific background in my later years to apply it. Mediumship, looking at it more systematically, I don't think that a number of researchers have given attention to it. And so in 2009, I founded Metaphysics Research, which is an organization that looks systematically at mediumship phenomena, past life regression, mm-hmm. out-of-body experience, anything to do with consciousness-related studies.
Right. Well, this is very important because there's a great deal of important information that is accessed through these routes, and if we can just validate them and explain them to the scientific community, I think we'll be able to cut years off of medical research and scientific research and everything else, because getting access to the Akashic records and getting correct diagnosis. I'm telling you, when I walk in the room now with a patient, I have full access to the information. And it's just really amazing to me what is available to us as practitioners, as doctors, as scientists. What's going to be available is amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, it's unfortunate that to actually probably explain that to your patients, that and sometimes you're potentially using intuitive knowledge, which is part of the basis that many of us have because we're spiritual beings. If we were to say that, and you in a scientific realm as a surgeon, unfortunately the environment and the culture does not support that, and it actually makes, could unfortunately, because of the environment we're in, reduces credibility, and that's why scientists, researchers and medical doctors fear actually openly discussing this, unfortunately.
But you know, it's interesting. Just today, several of my patients, because I was rattling on and telling them what they had and everything, details that they hadn't told me, they asked me, are you getting this from your intuition?
Yes.
And I go, yeah, I'm hearing your guides. I'm hearing what's wrong with you from your higher self, your guides, your angels, whatever you want to call it. But the information coming in is so much clearer. I mean, I used to get information, believe me, especially when it was really important, but
right.
It just is like an open book now.
Right, and I'm wondering if that's just more of your experience, especially because you're talking to a number of people, you're opening up to it, so more of these gifts are just flourishing now.
It's not just me, though. It really isn't. It's everybody.
And people are definitely...
Everybody is going to access this that can. You know, I mean, there may be some people that have such a strong belief that it doesn't exist that they will not accept it. But most doctors actually do this, and most know they do it. And nurses do it even more. But, you know, when you know, like, I'll give you an example.
Yeah.
I had a partner one time who was a general surgeon, and he says to me, he says, I walked in the ER the other day, and I just knew this patient had tubercular peritonitis. And I went, Donald, have you even ever seen tubercular peritonitis? He said, nope.
Yeah.
And I said, well, how'd you know that? He said, I don't know. I just knew it. And,
yeah.
And when he opened him up, he had tubercular peritonitis. You know how rare that is?
Well, you know, it's interesting you would say that, because a lot of us don't realize that just in our everyday life, we go into trance states. We don't realize it. And trance states really we're just talking about being very focused. And even like if you sit down to write an exam or you're focused, you're really putting yourself in a trance state and allowing other mm-hmm. spiritual entities that are working with you to help you flow better. And so it's true, absolutely. I think we're constantly, many of us, the inventions that are created, many of the thoughts that we have, new innovations,
mm-hmm.
are all coming through through intuition. And I think we should all be acknowledging that a bit more, but people are still fearful, I think.
Yeah, well, people may doubt themselves, but when you walk into a room and you know, for example, I just saw a patient that had viruses, parasites, intracellular infection, chemical toxicity, silicone toxicity, and biotoxicity from mold and yeast, and bacterial infection. Okay, all of that. But I'm hearing which antifungal, which antibiotic, which surgery to do. Whether or not to take the lymph nodes, you know, detail, detail, detail. Now, you know, I check it with muscle testing. I mean, you know, I still check everything to make sure it's right. But because I think it's important for the patient to understand that I'm not just pulling this out of the air. I'm actually, you know, I actually want to double check it. But, you know, most doctors don't realize that all of that information is readily available.
Absolutely.
And then they won't do unnecessary surgery. They won't put somebody in an antibiotic that isn't going to work or cause an allergic reaction. You know, they won't waste money, time, effort. They can hear the diagnosis. You know, this is what ideally we should be doing, hearing the diagnosis and then running the right test to prove it. I'm not saying we shouldn't prove the diagnosis. We should. But these women are coming in with $10,000 to $20,000 worth of negative diagnostic testing. I was just flipping through this just a few minutes ago and went, what a waste of money, you know?
I know. And I know.
It's
and
incredible.
I think, I think we're all opening up to, we're having spiritual awakening. People are having more out-of-body experiences, even near-death experiences, and having precognition. And
right.
I think with the more discussions like what you have on your show, for example, it opens up people to sort of recognizing, perhaps the information that's coming to me is coming for a purpose. There's synchronicities,
mm-hmm.
right? It's not by chance, for example, that you're hearing information. And it happens to be something that can be validated through other tests, and it actually happens to be correct. So I think that, yes, I'm confident, I'm more positive that people are opening up
mm-hmm.
to these kinds of this understanding that consciousness sort of pervades outside of our brain and is helpful to our daily lives, not just for studying, well, is there an afterlife? It's that, sure, it can help us make diagnostic. It can actually help us with energy healing. It can help us create innovations or inventions through just thoughts, right? So
you know, I think we should use it in what we choose to eat, you know. I mean, with all of the danger in the fish and the meat and even the tainted vegetables, you know, with parasites or with bacteria, we need to be more, I guess, aware that there's help out there that helps us avoid taking in foods that aren't good for us, going places that we don't need to go. I mean, have you ever decided, like, well, I don't really know if I want to go to this place. There might be a party or there might be a, you know, gathering. And you know, you got to weigh. I mean, is it worth going? You know, is it going to be, are you going to meet somebody there that you really need to meet, or is it just going to be a waste of time?
You know,
so I use it all the time. I mean, before I go anywhere, I was telling this to my medical student. I had her muscle test me to see if I needed to go somewhere, because I didn't know. It was a WashU alumni meeting. And I met some people there. You know, it was important that I go, but I didn't know if it was important, you see? So I muscle tested that.
No, I remember when I was just at the beginning of the show, I was just telling you about my earlier spiritual experiences. I didn't know why I would not, you know, let's say there was a particular job there and it looked great and everybody would go for it, but you were saying, no, I don't even need to look into it. And later I would find out, I would look back at a year later and I would say, well, I could, you know, it was falling apart or the job actually vanished. It was only there for a temporary period. I've been using that in my life throughout my lifetime, but didn't really, I wasn't able to know exactly what it was till I started looking at sort of underlying scientific principles. And I refuse to focus too logically on anything. I do go with my intuition and I don't question it anymore because our intuition knows more than the logic.
Right, right. I mean, we were having a discussion yesterday about this at a. It actually was a little informal gathering. We were one of the guys said, you know, if you think in your ego sense, your separated sense that you know more than all that is, you know. I mean, how arrogant is that? You know, it's like, I mean, think about it. If you really believe what we've been told by, you know, spiritual teachers is that consciousness or all that is trying to help you at every moment, you know, get ahead, do better, you know, avoid accidents. And I even said, you know, the information coming in right now from multiple sources, it's not just one source, multiple sources, is that every day we get directed away from serious accidents or, you know, serious problems or meeting with people that are con artists or, you know, we get protected way more than we can ever know.
Absolutely. And I think also even when negative things happen, right? I mean, how many negative things happen to people every day? And now because I have a better understanding of how intuition works and consciousness, now I'm looking back and I said, this is bad. It looks bad now, but I think this is really a blessing. And I mean, it's no different than that phrase we used to use. It's a blessing in disguise. But I think that's what it is.
Yeah, people, you know, a lot of people have written books about that, that some horrible things that people would say, oh, that's just terrible, really caused them to drop the more superficial life and seek a, you know, a spiritually based life that was a lot more fulfilling and really a lot better for them and you know, really got them on their spiritual path.
Absolutely.
So tell us a little bit about what you've, discovered in your research on mediumship. What is it that you've learned?
Well, as we talked about in the initial show that we had with mental mediums, we talked about what really I learned in terms of the sort of the phenomena really more closely with mental mediumships, which is a clairvoyant audience. But during that time of the research, which was a 3-year study at that period, a lot of the mental mediums started talking about they were sitters. They had observed other physical mediums producing physical manifestations, such as levitation tables. But in particular, what really got me was that another researcher, it was the Zammitts, Victor and Wendy Zammit in Australia, they had indicated that the highest form of evidence for survival of consciousness could come through physical mediumship. And of course, I thought that this was a phenomena of the 19th century. You know, going back
to the early physical
mediums, I thought, my goodness, are you saying that there are physical mediums in the world
today,
right now that could actually produce reunions. And by reunions, I mean that they could actually materialize a past loved one into the seance room. Now, does that not seem absolutely, at first, just absolutely unbelievable, right? At first.
Yeah, at first. But, you know, what you have to determine is how the, you know, the actual structure of how that occurs, you know, the actual, and that's what you've done. I mean, you've looked at that. You've looked at how that can happen.
Yeah.
Once you explain it, then it's no longer a, you know, a miracle. It's actually spiritual scientific information.
It is. And I think the most important thing when people are looking at this is, first of all, to understand that there's only very few physical mediums in the world that can do reunions.
Right.
That's different from those who can produce apports or materialize, you know, apports being materialized, dematerialized and materialized matter from one place to the other. I mean, I think there's more of them that can do that. But I was specifically focused on those who could demonstrate survival of consciousness. And in this, I found I'll focus on one particular piece of research, which was with David Thompson, because I had looked at that over several seances and was able to sort of, you know, review the protocol, which is extensive. We're talking about, you know, it may sound difficult for people to hear this, but, you know, gagging the medium and also strapping them, using metal detectors, really examining the room, examining if there are props, and having different checkers always look. And really, after looking at this close protocol and after reviewing several seances, what I had found is that the materialization of entities is a possibility. After hearing 15 different voices, which I don't see how anyone could produce, and actually seeing ectoplasm. And seeing ectoplasm, which is it's a formless gelatinous. It actually is produced from, and emanates from the medium throughout the orifices, and it's actually the medium. It's actually the stimulus that is produces the physical phenomenon. So, I mean, I could go on to tell you exactly why we think this is true, but, I mean, just for people to understand that there is an extensive protocol and checking, because mostly these seances are sometimes done with red light and luminous plaque, but I would say 80% of it is done in darkness. So, of course, people think, could somebody be, you know, producing trickery? Is this fraud? I did not find any evidence of fraud.
Yeah, the really interesting thing that I found, too, is that this takes a physical toll on the person doing this, especially if they do it too much. I mean, it has consequences. So it's like a physical, it's like, you know, if somebody goes out and lifts heavy boxes all day, they can get, you know, strained shoulder or muscle aches or whatever. It's actually physical work.
Yeah, absolutely. The production of ectoplasm, my understanding is that is produced within everybody from it. Everybody can produce ectoplasm through the pancreas, but they produce it in such enormous amounts, which is what the spirit teams on the other side use to help the materialized forms come through. And I did an interview, a close-up interview with David Thompson and Kai Mugi. Kai Mugi is from Germany, and he also does public demonstrations. And you're absolutely right. The repercussions of producing ectoplasm, first of all, it takes away a lot of their fluids. They gain a lot of weight. And a number of times, if the spirit, the control, does not take them out of trance fast enough, Sometimes it's very difficult to recover. Like Kai Mugi indicated, sometimes it was a full week before he was back to normal, just because they're always under trance during the materialization of this phenomenon.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that in itself is evidence that it's not trickery. You know, if it has physical consequences that are fairly predictable and, you know, could be, you know, I mean, from person to person, they're very similar. It's a physiological, or it's an extreme physiological state.
Absolutely.
You know,
and I think
like holding your breath, you know. I watched this thing on the magician that held his breath for 17 minutes. I mean, he trained to do that. I mean, it was an extreme physiological condition. And I think these mediums fall under similar, you know, similar things. They practice. They push it to the limit to be able to do this stuff.
Yeah, and I think the one of the reasons we don't see a number of physical mediums doing this work today is, first of all, the public is just, we're so socially conditioned to think when you're dead, you're dead. And so
right.
When we talk about materialized entities, and of course 80% of it is in a dark room, people
mm-hmm.
are shut off. The challenge is as well, and this has happened, so for example, Kai Miyuki explained that in one seance in the United States, I think it was California or Las Vegas,
mm-hmm.
the sitters, one of the sitters tried to grab a materialized form. And what they don't understand is, and this is why, again, you talk about, you know, other evidence of it not being trickery, is on one occasion, the control actually knew that it was going to happen and actually shut down the whole seance. And so,
mm-hmm.
there was protection there. Another time, unfortunately, the sitter actually did grab out to what he thought would be. He thought it was going to be somebody walking around with, you know, a sheet. He couldn't believe that there would be a materialized form.
Yeah, right.
Kai was severely damaged on his arm. He showed us the burn that the ectoplasm makes.
Mm-hmm.
And once people
right.
understand that ectoplasm becomes a life force, it's coming from the body, it can actually endanger the medium. So much so it actually killed. That same incident happened to Helen Duncan, which historically that happened. The police raided her in a seance room, and the ectoplasm flew back into her body. And after a couple of days in the hospital, she couldn't withstand those injuries. So people sort of, I mean, they are working towards using different types of lighting that will not affect
mm-hmm.
the ectoplasm, but for the most part, it diminishes the ectoplasm. And without ectoplasm and the thought that is being
mm-hmm.
produced by the spirit team,
it's
because ectoplasm in itself is just an inanimate substance, but with
mm-hmm.
the thought that is used from the spirit world, it creates a different vibration, which
right.
allows for physical manifestation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I think that the mental aspects, the mental mediumship, is something that is done widely. I mean, it seems to be done widely.
Mm-hmm.
It's done. I mean, even if it's not done for public consumption, it's privately. It's done quite a bit. And even people, I mean, I know lots of people who speak to their dead relatives. I mean, that's, you know, they get information from their dead relatives that,
right.
that turns out to be accurate. You know, I mean, they
right.
use it. You know, granted, I have a lot of friends who are clairvoyants, so, you know, it's more likely that I would know these people. But the physical mediumship is something that is just fascinating. I mean, it's just really fascinating that
yeah.
that we can work with teams of people. You know, we have a team on this side, you know, a circle with the medium producing the ectoplasm, and then a team of spirits on the other side projecting into that ectoplasm, you know, a form that is recognizable by a sitter. Yeah, that's just incredible.
It's incredible. And I think for me, I mean, because there are some challenges, right, Dr. Kolb? I mean, the challenge is that some individuals, I mean, groups, even including sometimes the spiritualist church, believe it or not, feel that they sometimes confuse, for example, mental mediumship. They feel that there's more evidence coming forward from an evidential medium. So, for example,
mm-hmm.
when I was testing mental mediums, we would be looking at things like, you know, would you be able to provide information under controlled conditions that the sitter wouldn't know, that anybody
mm-hmm.
else wouldn't know, details like names, places. What they don't understand is that when your loved one, okay, materializes in this seance. And I observed, I think it was like, because three loved ones can come through each seance. There could be other materialized mm-hmm. entities. But bringing through a loved one is even more difficult because those individuals use up more physical energy. They don't know how to use what's called the ectoplasmic mass, which is used to mm-hmm. create a direct voice. They mm-hmm. it's like talking in water for them. So if right. they've just passed over and they're just for the first time using an ectoplasmic mass to materialize and speak to their loved one in the seance room, it uses a lot more energy. And what sometimes sitters are looking for, they're looking for details like names and specific places, like we would look for in mental mediumship. But what right. physical mediumship is, for example, you may have the opportunity, and let me give you this example. An entity called May, which is she was a slave from, you know, I think it was the early 18th century. And she comes through with a crinoline dress, and you can literally hear the crinoline dress, and there's nobody in the room with crinoline dress.
Right.
And she
yeah.
brings back, her job was to bring back this baby. Now, here's what I'm saying. So I'm comparing this to mental mediumship. In mental mediumship, you might hear a direct piece of information that's either prescient mm-hmm. in nature or perhaps gives you evidence that that's your loved one. But what about right. that the mother was able to touch that baby's hand, and there was no
right.
small hand like that in the room? Everybody, mm-hmm. I mean, there are no trap doors here. We're talking about one
right.
door, no windows, not open and completely sealed. 15 to 20 people, all in a hand chain, and you cannot produce a little baby's hand that moves up your hand. And she was, so she mm-hmm. that baby was permitted to touch the hand, and another sitter sitting beside her, because his hand was in the chain, felt that hand as well, and he had no
mm-hmm.
reason to lie. And then she did admit
right.
to me later, because I followed up with the sitters, that yes, she did lose a young child. She did not want to talk about it too openly in the seance
mm-hmm.
room because she did not want anyone
right.
to know that she had lost a child. Now, so compare that to mental mediumship. It's not about
mm-hmm.
that baby said anything directly with information or telepathically, but
mm-hmm.
physically provided some evidence that that baby
right.
was still in the spirit world. Quite
yeah,
amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. Did you ever hear about the evidence of, well, it was probably considered the best evidence of life after death ever published. It was actually published in one of the research journals. It was done in the 1980s before computers, but a group in Europe contacted a chess player that had recently died. He was a grandmaster. He was Hungarian, and
uh-huh.
he had died, and through the one of the people in the group, he played a current living chess master.
Yes, I have heard.
Did you
of
hear
that.
About that?
Proof. Yeah, and that.
Yeah.
And that.
So you can't argue. See, information is hard to. I mean, someone's always going to say that, you know, through this weird chain of events, that information was told by, you know, whatever. But
yeah.
you can't, information is information, but skills are different. And skills, I mean, because the person playing, the person who was hearing the Hungarian and playing with the grandmaster, the living grandmaster, didn't know how to play chess. So there's no way he could have developed that skill. And
yeah,
it took like 60 or 80 moves, but the Hungarian lost. But he played a game. Actually, Bobby Fischer analyzed it, because I interviewed Bobby Fischer's Russell Targ was Bobby Fischer's brother-in-law.
Oh, okay.
And Russell Targ told me this story on the air.
Yeah.
Russell Targ had Bobby Fischer look at that 60-move thing and said only a grandmaster could have played that game. And it turned out, on further analysis, the Hungarian had not been alive. You know, he had died before certain chess developments had occurred. So he never used them. And then some of his middle game was very messy, like he had played in previous things too. So he had similar patterns to his pattern, and he did not use the new openings and the new, you know, because chess is evolving. So he played the game as if he was still living in that era that when he was living.
Right.
And Bobby Fischer analyzed it and said only a chess grandmaster could have played this game. So, you know, that's pretty much complete proof of afterlife. And the Hungarian had a message for it. You know, he said that he did it because he really wanted to contribute to proof that an afterlife existed. You know, he was interested in that project. So he volunteered for it.
It's
and he said that they don't play much chess in the afterlife, which is interesting.
Yeah, no, it's
or he didn't. He didn't. Yeah. I mean, I think they do. I have a good friend who's clairvoyant who plays chess at a high level, and I know that. I mean, we both know that deceased grandmasters help him. You know.
Yeah, no, it's
more than just him playing chess. That's right.
It's an amazing example, and there's so many amazing examples. But for some reason, and what was interesting is I had just interviewed a Cambridge scientist, Professor Peter Wadham, just recently, and he was explaining that he had wanted to be, for example, a psychical researcher at Cambridge, and he was explaining his interest in, for example, Sir William Crookes. And Sir William Crookes, mm-hmm. very early on, I mean, in the early 19th century, had all demonstrated. This is a man who was known for, thallium and experiences with the cathode ray, and was recognized as a patented scientist. But when he came forward and said that a physical medium named Florence Cook could materialize an entity called Katie King, and that mm-hmm. he'd seen it repeatedly, everyone just looked at him like, well, we don't recognize that, but yet we recognize you as a great scientist. So I think it is to say that a lot of this information has been suppressed over the years. A number of researchers have come forward and bravely documented this. And I mean, I bravely documented it in this book, Medium 9, The Transformational Powers of Spiritual Energy.
Right.
But I felt there was enough evidence that people really should take a good look at this, because spirit teams are working with people to try to demonstrate, just like you explained with the chest, the grandmaster example, that they are always working to come up with very unique experiments. And I mm-hmm. felt very privileged. I was able to see a unique experiment because I was able to ask the control, David Thompson's control, where is the ectoplasm? Because in Kai Myugi's seance, you could see the ectoplasm flowing from his mouth with red light. But in David Thompson's, he was behind the cabinet, so I had asked the control, where is the ectoplasm? He was able to get the luminous plaque, which is one of the only props, but there's only a few props that we can see before that are actually in the room. The luminous plaque is like light right in front of my face, and he showed me mm-hmm. the undulating ectoplasm, and he started to mm-hmm. show me what materialization of fingers looks like, and his fingers started to materialize. And so he was trying to demonstrate to me mm-hmm. that you may not see the ectoplasm in this seance, but I can show it to you. And I was, and there's no way you could produce the substance. It moved from very different forms. So it was mist, mm-hmm. and then it undulated like a napkin, and then it became more and more solid, which is what ectoplasm does. And it literally, mm-hmm. that's how they are able to show themselves. And I don't think anybody could make up the materialization of a finger. It's not like you just dropped a finger. It started to, it's almost like it mm-hmm. was growing. And one other point with that is there has been a call out to magicians, I think for quite maybe the last 6 to 8 years, by the Zamets, who have been researching physical mediumship and were one of the mm-hmm. researchers that recommended me to David Thompson. And no magician has come forward and been able to demonstrate and produce this phenomenon under the same conditions. So, again, it's more validation that we just don't die. We survive, mm-hmm. and these spirit forms, through their thought and through ectoplasm, have to mm-hmm. remember their voice. They have to remember how they physically moved. They have to remember certain they have to remember certain thoughts and mm-hmm. evidence that they might share with their family member during that seance. And that is I think, is the greatest proof of survival of consciousness for me in my research.
Oh, yeah.
Mental mediumship, I think, is very important as well because it's complementary.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that we should just shut the door to physical mediumship, despite the fact that historically there have been challenges, and sometimes challenges still today, I would say, and I wrote about that in the book, about identity. Are we really talking to, let's say, your past loved one is Aunt Lily? Is that really Aunt Lily? I mean, I think there's some cases mm-hmm. where it's difficult. We know it's a physical entity that's coming through, but is that really Aunt Lily? I think there's some.
Yeah, you know, I don't understand why people have such a hard time believing in the afterlife, though, because,
yes.
I mean, is it more likely that, you know, there's a non-physical realm that we come out of, you know, we come out of and then go into the physical realm and go in and out of it to, in order to learn all of the lessons that there are to learn and to experience the physical realm and experience duality? Or, I mean, does it make any sense whatsoever that you would live one lifetime and then completely be obliterated, never to learn again? I mean, that just doesn't make any sense to me.
No, it doesn't make any sense, but I think the social conditioning, unfortunately, with some of the, you know, people are highly brought up. They're brought up in a religious environment, and that mm-hmm. religious environment very much condones or does not support any kind of communication. They're actually okay with, it's very interesting, you know, the head of the Anglican Church, there's a report that they were okay with communication being one way, the spirit world communicating with us here. But any mm-hmm. us trying to contact them, this is where their problem is. They want that to be through the priesthood. And we could see that mm-hmm. with the first experiment with instrumental transcommunication when, I think it was Father Gomeshi, I may have the wrong last name, but Father Gomeshi had started, you know, just doing his choir work with the radio, started getting sounds through the radio and realized that it was his father who was from, you know, mm-hmm. obviously the past and had asked the church whether he was able to, is this an acceptable form of communication? They said, absolutely, because it's coming towards them. He wasn't trying mm-hmm. to communicate. So I think going back to your point, there are political issues, there are the traditional medical community and the religious community. There are certain mm-hmm. things people feel bound to that they've grown up in, and it's very difficult for them to shake.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things, and I've learned this because I've been doing the radio show and I've interviewed authors that have huge amounts of information from their dead relatives about what happens after their dead relatives died, like The Afterlife of Billy Fingers. I don't know if you've heard of that book, but it's a really good book for what happens, the stages that someone who dies goes through. You know, it's not just one thing. You don't just 1 minute you're alive and then 1 minute you're all with all that is, you know, and have total access to all knowledge. That's not the way it is. It's a gradual thing, and which makes sense. I mean, otherwise it would be too much of a shock, probably. But
absolutely.
You know, but all of these books. I mean, that's what the great thing about it, having a radio show, because you can interview whoever you want about whatever you want, and then you can put all the pieces together. But really, more and more people on the other side are communicating with their living relatives about what it was like to go through this, and their stories are very similar. You know, I mean, they don't know each other, but their stories are very similar. So I would say that, you know, it's probably going to be fairly well known what happens after we die and what happened between lives. I had one psychologist hypnotize 1,000 people, not going back to a previous life, but going back to what happened between that life and this life. And all their stories were very similar, you know. You know, the judgment day and the, you know, it's not, you know, it's not what you think. It's very benign, but they want you to learn. You know, it's like you have a committee that kind of takes you through what you did and what you should have done and what you didn't do, and you know, shows you what would have happened if you did something different. You know, so but 1,000 people hypnotized have the same story. So guess what? You know, I came to the conclusion that's probably what it is, because information that comes through hypnosis is not going to be filtered by the conscious mind.
Yeah. No, so, and that's why, I think that that's why even also it's important, you're raising a good point, is that, you know, so for example, with past life regression therapy, which is where they do the interlife phase and people, they can talk, you know, make sure that their patient is not just talking about what happened in previous lives, but what's happening in between, which is how they get that
between lives. Yes.
Yeah, we can triangulate that information, and this is what I've been doing: is not only just looking at past life regression, looking at energy healing, out of body experiences, and physical mediumship. And you're right; you triangulate that, and you converge on a number of particular points. And picking up on that point, so the I have an example where the control in one of the physical mediumship seances, they just answer a number of questions. The sitter can ask anything, and that's how you know it's not a recording. It's an interactive. And the sitter, a lot of sitters want to know what happens after suicide. And each time these spirit control says similar things. And one of the things, just to put it in this clear and succinct point, is what happens when you commit suicide is you have an overwhelming negative sense, unfortunately. So all your memories, thoughts, and personality, it still transitions. But what happens with suicide is it's just so negative that unfortunately overwhelms and overtakes any even positive thoughts and experiences that you had. And this is why, as you were talking about the continuous stages, this is why that continuous growth period is very important for that individual. They still have to address those issues. They still have to find out what it was that they couldn't achieve with that physical experience. And so going back to the point you made about there being stages in growth, people think that when they transition over, that's just it. We were done with this life. No, there was another answer from the suicide question, is that there's still have to figure out how to manage that physical experience that was difficult for them, and how are they going to work out the issues of materialism or forgiveness or, you know, depression. All of that is still part of the continuous growth, which is very much part of the continuous trajectory we have throughout our soul's growth plan.
Yeah, so, you know, that MASH song, suicide is painless, you know, it really isn't. It's not really something that gets you out of anything. And and I'm making this statement not from personal experience, because, of course, I didn't commit suicide in this lifetime, but of the stories of the people who did. And like you say, they're very similar, and you don't get out of anything with suicide.
No.
So if you think you're escaping, you're not. And so, and in fact, it can be very, very difficult, more difficult to get through it after the suicide. So you have, to really think twice before doing that.
Really?
You know, I think people who commit suicide, I mean, I take care of a lot of people who attempt suicide, obviously. And I think people don't realize that it's a myth that you can, you know, escape your problems with suicide. You can't.
Well, we've just now provided another reason why consciousness and this discussion of consciousness is very important, because it has a big application for the issue of suicide. If people do think, I mean, and this is important because people are suffering. There are a lot of people out there
with
difficulty going through their physical life. You know, materialism is at its highest. If they have a good understanding of what really the spiritual world is, it is a vibration. That is what we are from every consciousness study that I've looked at, that is we have convergence on that fact, that the spiritual world is a vibration. And when you go over to that, when you transition there, your vibration will match the vibration and the reality of the spiritual realm that you will end up into. And
that's right.
So if you think about it, that suicide And that negative energy, unfortunately, that's the vibratory level you will be in.
You end up in, yeah. And
yeah.
It's a fight upward. And,
it
you know,
is.
Like when you kill somebody, say you murder somebody, then when you die, that puts you at a certain level at that vibration. And
yeah.
Your victims are usually much higher than you are. You know,
yeah.
Your victims are usually really pretty high. And, you know, there was a lot of discussion about, you know, how they interact, you know. And they said, well, you know, I can't interact too much with him because he's way down there and I don't go down there. You know, that's not where I live, you know. So it's kind of like the murderers and the con artists and even the suicides create their own prisons.
Yeah. And another application I found, though, through my research, too, and this was actually a presentation, I called it What Happens in the Afterlife. I was in Arizona, and this was for the Afterlife Conference. I believe that's where we now. This just a couple of weeks ago. What I was trying to explain is that the energy, the vibrational state that we create now, and this is why we need to understand that when we are talking about thoughts create reality here, We're not just talking about it having an effect right now. It is having an effect on how you're creating your life in the afterlife and also your future life and how you're creating. So when somebody says, "What is it like in the afterlife?" we have evidence from not only past life regression. We have it from physical mediumship. We also have it through out of body experiences. That the life is one that you create through your vibrational frequencies and your thought patterns. And so it's not this one reality that can be stated. It really is about the way we experience life and how we create it. And I think if we understand that, that's going to make a huge difference on how you make your decisions in this life, how you deal with your relationships.
Yeah.
And I think that's a huge form of healing right there, just understanding that.
Yeah, one thing, you may remember this. Do you remember when Gandhi was murdered?
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember what he said? I'm trying to get the exact words, but Gandhi realized that how you die is very important. And if you die hating the person who's murdering you, that will lower your vibration.
Ah.
So his last words were something really having to do with God, you know.
Yeah.
It wasn't, you know, he wasn't mad at the person who was killing him.
Yeah, no, I'll have to go
you
back
see?
To look at that because, see, there again.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he knew that, though. He knew that it was very important not to have negative emotions as he died.
Yeah.
And you know, I mean, that's a sign of a master right there because, I mean, if somebody came up and shot you, you know, your last thought and my last thought might be, you know, with a lot of profanity in it, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it really
yeah.
could. You know?
And that's why the issue of
how dare they, you know?
Yeah. And that's why the issue of forgiveness.
We
hear it as cliche, right? But we really do know that when something evil happens to us, I know how difficult it is in the physical world, but these are part of the spiritual tests. We're going through them for a purpose. And when we have something evil happen to us, it is our job to fill ourselves with forgiveness. I mean, we can't be stupid and not address and avoid, but it is to fill ourselves with forgiveness and always continue to vibrate on that higher frequency. And that is, I would say, if there's one thing that we all have to do is work to vibrate on a higher frequency on a daily basis, despite the fact that somebody is doing road rage with us or somebody's telling us off. But that is it. That is it. Our job is to constantly find ways to vibrate on higher vibrational frequencies.
Right.
And our listeners who think that might be just sort of, you know, something of a belief, we do know that is a scientific fact that our cells vibrate at different frequencies. And subatomic, you know, quantum physics and all of the work that's being looked at in terms of subatomic particles, we know that this is a scientific fact. There's been experiments, the two-slit experiment, all of these things. So people don't have to worry that anything that's being said is just a notion or a potential research. This is scientifically based, and if we can apply it mm-hmm. to our daily life, we can make major transformations. And that is really what my work at this point is about, sort of mm-hmm. applying that research to help people transform their current life.
So tell us a little bit more about the Afterlife Conference. What else was being presented there? What did you learn?
Yeah, so the theme that they asked the presenters to look at is from your research, mm-hmm. what do we know? What do we now know about the afterlife? And I think really we had a number of presenters. It's funny that you were talking about the past life regression, or people may know it better as hypnotherapy. That work, mm-hmm. A lot of that work is helping us understand what, especially in the interlife phase. We had one presenter talk about the progression, how you can actually progress individuals, not just go to regress them, but actually progress them. Because if we mm-hmm. understand the afterlife, there is no time. So someone's able to be in a different state of consciousness and start to talk to the therapist about mm-hmm. what the higher self is talking about in the future, that can also be useful. Another area that was quite big is the out-of-body experiences. And again, mm-hmm. because out-of-body experience, that kind of work, we do know that there are some individuals who have been trained. You know, there's the Monroe Institute, and people are now understanding
right.
that there are techniques to have out-of-body experiences, and with out-of-body experiences, you can actually experience what the astral, mm-hmm. what astral travel is like. And I think one of the key aspects is again, when we were talking about vibrational frequencies and we were talking about thought, the thought-induced reality, this is where people who are out-of-body experiencers have validated that they can be out of their body, and what a change in thought changes the reality immediately. Even a mm-hmm. quick thought can put them back into their physical body. And so just
right.
that concept alone of thought-induced reality is being validated through out-of-body experiences. So I would say physical mediumship, out-of-body experiences, and also the past life regression were key themes and key sources of information for people to be able to talk about what happens in the afterlife.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's great that they're having conferences that are looking at that. That's just wonderful.
Yeah, this is an annual conference, and another area mm-hmm. I should have mentioned as well is always the most, is an important one, is sort of the electronic voice phenomena. And that presenter, she didn't come this year, but Sonia Rinaldi from Brazil, who I also mm-hmm. interviewed for my book as well. It's fascinating what they're sharing, is that the radio station that has been built from the Brazilian spirit team is now opening mm-hmm. up in America. So, for example, mm-hmm. When some American scientists, I understand, went to Brazil recently to sort of examine how do these voices come through the radio? What they learned was that they asked, why is all this information, we're English, why is this information coming to us in Portuguese, mm-hmm. which was the main language? And some of the information, and also with collaboration, I'm understanding with this research, through collaboration with mediums, they're explaining that they have to build, it's like a converter, and it's a laying down of material now to allow an English channel to be developed for researchers to have this better communication through what we call an electronic voice phenomena. So we're getting mm-hmm. information that spirit teams are working to, they have to use different chemical vibrations to allow for that communication to be stronger and in the language we're going to understand. So these are some new things that are happening.
There was an article in the Noetic Science Journal about a group in Noetic Science in Europe that was, in a group that was meditating, and they were given certain information through channeling about components that they could buy at something similar to Radio Shack, and they bought it, and they converted a TV into something where you turn it on, and a deceased person would appear on the TV and talk to them.
Yeah. It's amazing. So the spirit team was exactly giving them information as to how to better see, and that's part of the instrumental communication, because that's one of the things we know is spirit world they can manipulate any kind of electronic
right.
Energy.
A lot easier than ectoplasm, evidently. You know, like it's a lot easier.
And one of the things that's definitely coming out, which was a huge theme, and I think, and this will be very interesting for you, and I'd be interested to hear, Dr. Kolb, if any of your other guests have talked about this. What came through for me during this research, and I noticed with the other presenters at this conference, is that the discussion of the afterlife cannot be had now without the discussion of the extraterrestrial phenomena. The discussion of, for example, instrumental communication specifically, and also with physical mediumship, we know that when it comes to complex communication systems, we know it's the extraterrestrials. And we know that because they show up in pictures. They share that they are, and they communicate different information. So, I mean, that's probably a whole other show in itself, but the point is that now we're realizing more than ever that we do have extraterrestrials, which are higher beings, facilitating some of this communication, which I found fascinating, and I found in my own research I couldn't ignore any further.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the extraterrestrials that are involved are higher dimensional. You know, they're fifth and sixth and higher, even higher than that dimensional.
Right.
And you know, I guess the thing that I hadn't thought of, and you're probably thinking too, is what is the relationship of, you know, where we go after we die? Say, if we're vibrating high enough, we might even get to the sixth dimension. You know, heaven is supposed to be the fifth dimension, and the fourth dimension is purgatory, which, you know, is sometimes not such a great place to be. But, you know, the idea is, if you vibrate into the fifth dimension, are you going to run into these extraterrestrials that live there? I mean, I honestly don't know. I mean,
what was interesting is I ended up talking to another researcher, William Truenat, who he's the brave one that has really started to answer those questions with Paul Hamden, who is claimed to communicate with extraterrestrials. So I discussed him in the last chapter, because I do a whole chapter just on the relationship between extraterrestrials and the spirit world. But coming from William Truenat's work, he explains, and I try to summarize it, is that they are not from the same at all, from any kind of dimension that interrelates with the human spirit. They don't have the same structure. However, what we do know, which is so interesting, is from the interlife phase work, and I did document some of those case studies, is that with the interlife phase, through those individuals that were regressed, we'll talk about moving from an extraterrestrial body into a human body. So I don't think we know enough about the processes and how the extraterrestrial world interacts exactly with the... But what we do know, what I do know, is we need to talk about it more and research them more together, rather than sort of some people feel it's like, let's talk about survival of consciousness separate and the extraterrestrial phenomena separate. What we're realizing is this is all interrelated, and it's related to the larger subject of consciousness.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, we can go ahead and ask those questions in session, and they'll answer them. You know, I mean, the answers will come through.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, hopefully we'll be able to understand the answers, you know. It's just hard sometimes to, you know, the whole thing about information about the ascension and information about things that, I mean, the information coming through about the ascension is very, very reproducible from many, many different sources. It's just difficult to understand it because we're kind of, you know, almost stuck in the third dimension. You know, we're
absolutely.
The third dimension is a very persistent illusion. So, you almost have to break out of it to understand what it's going to be like to ascend into another dimension.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of, you know, it's so interesting. I mean, if you look at a number of the TV programs, I think a lot of them are trying to acclimatize, especially the concepts of, you know, telepathy and, you know, I can even hear my 9-year-old son talking about them on a regular basis. And this is the kind of discussions that are happening with the extraterrestrial community. And so it is in our social media and in our social discourse. Mm-hmm. But I think what happens is that the social media wants to keep it as a kind of fantasy world, where it's when you start to really research anything related to physical mediumship, mental mediumship, out-of-body experiences, you start to, and especially interdimensional transcommunication, if extraterrestrials continually come up, then I think we have to start really kind of examining how do they have an impact, what is their influence, and how do they facilitate the communication? Mm-hmm. How are they helping?
Yeah, well, that's very, very true. I mean, it's almost like we're going to have more and more communication the higher our frequencies are, you know. It's like back in the 60s, one of my spiritual father was one of the first people to channel in Atlanta, okay? And he said he had to do it in trance and on the floor and with great effort and great pain, you know. It was a painful thing to do, this channeling. And now people don't need to be in trance to channel. It's just so much easier. And it's the higher the vibrations go, the easier all this stuff is. And actually, the more information we get, too, because we can bring in the information rather than having to suffer, going to trance or something to do it. You know, it's like,
and I think when people understand that the way they feel is the direct relationship with vibrations, I think when people start to realize they have to literally work at it. You're angry? No. Mm-hmm. People can try this exercise. You're trying to work out a problem. You're angry, you're anxious, and you're frustrated. Everybody knows that you're supposed to just take a quick walk and relax, and that's just because you need to change your vibrational frequency, and that information just shoots back into your mind. Mm-hmm. Whatever you were racking your brain to figure out 10 minutes ago, when you've relaxed, it comes back to you because you're vibrating. Anyone can contact me through my website. First of all, www.medium7.com. We also invite you to look at our YouTube videos under Donna Moncrief, make comments, and we can be reached at the medium7book@yahoo.ca or medium7research@gmail.com.
And can you tell folks where they can get your new book?
Yes. So the new book is called Medium 9, The Transformational Powers of Spiritual Energy, and you can get it at any online bookstore, Amazon Book Depository, in paperback, in Kindle, any kind of digital format you're looking for. So pretty much anywhere.
Well, great. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been delightful talking to you, and I'm really glad that folks like yourself and other researchers are looking into this and really explaining to the scientific community what's going on in a way that they can accept it and hopefully use it, because it's really going to help them ever able to access Akashic records for research purposes.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for having me. It was a very enjoyable conversation.
Thanks a lot. This is Dr. Susan Kopp, the Temple of Health Radio Show. We've been interviewing Donna Moncrief on her new book, Medium 9. And please join us next week for Temple of Health Radio Show.